Hi, this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show. Would you like to meet my money coach, the man who is helping me develop passive income strategies and improve my overall wealth? Well, you're in the right place. Hi, this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio, and I'm bringing on my friend and coaching client and my financial coach, Chris Larson. He lives down in Asheville, and he is going to help you live the life of your dreams. Even if you're just starting out with a couple thousand dollars to invest, he's going to show you exactly what real estate strategy to use and so many other good things so that you can build better wealth for your family. All right, let's jump into the show. Chris is a lot of fun, down-to-earth guy, and you're going to learn so much and about what to do next. All right, so this is going to be a really exciting episode of Early to Rise Radio. If you are interested in generating more income and also learning about real estate investing and all the cool things that, you know, my mentor, Michael Masterson, aka Mark Ford, has been talking about for years and years and years, and it's one of the things that attracted me to Early to Rise, as it did for Chris Larson, who is my guest today. Chris, welcome to the show.
Craig, I'm fired up to be here.
Yeah, it's going to be great. So you've come a long way down the Early to Rise path. So Michael Masterson, the founder of Early to Rise, for anybody who doesn't know who he is, you know, you were a fan of his. How long ago did you find his stuff?
Yeah, Craig, I'm going to say it's been 7 or 8 years. And, you know, I loved Early to Rise. And that was probably around the time that you started to run that.
And yeah, it's been 10 years now. So it was 2011 July. So yeah. I would have taken it over by the time that you had found them. Did you find it through Ready Fire Aim?
You know what? It wasn't. I don't know how I came across it, but it was one of those things that, I mean, now I'm sitting here talking to you today, but you know, Michael Masterson, Mark Ford's book, I actually quote in my book. So, you know, if you're listening today and you like what you hear, you want to learn more, you can get it at nextlevelincome.com. We got a free book link on there. But yeah, I love Mark's vision of adding businesses and real estate to a financial plan. And if you've heard me talk about this, you'll hear me say, you can't think like a $1 million investor. You got to think like a $100 million investor. And that is how ultra wealthy families make their money, through businesses and real estate.
Yeah. And that was the first thing you said to me. And, you know, Chris is a coaching client of mine and I'm a coaching client of his. So I need a little bit of help in putting more Michael Masterson money into my life. Now, Chris, I bet there are a few people listening who are like, whoa, wait a minute. I don't have millions or whatever. I'm not ultra wealthy. Can you just give them a little reassurance here that what we're about to talk about today is something that can be used by somebody making $50,000 a year?
Yeah. So if I stunned you a little bit there when I said you got to think like you have $100 million and you think, well, not only do I not have it, I'm not going to be there potentially in my lifetime. That's okay. I started with less than $3,000 with my first real estate investment at age 21. Yeah. I was not raised with a lot of money. I was from a family of savers, and you know, I made $18,000 my first year working. So I can tell you that you don't have to start with a lot of money. And that's what attracted me to real estate, Craig. It was the ability to leverage, to partner, but more specifically to control the income and the value of what you have. And that is one of the things I think that both businesses and real estate offer to investors or individuals, the ability to add tremendous value to those and grow your wealth exponentially. So, first off, you don't need a lot of money to start. But again, if you can think like ultra wealthy, even if you're only starting with a few thousand.
Absolutely great. Yeah. And so, you know, you actually have a biomechanical engineering degree and an MBA in finance at Virginia Tech. And in fact, you actually still have, as of the time of this recording, but not for much longer, a full-time job. So tell us a little bit more about that. And then we'll get into why you didn't go into the financial services industry.
Yeah. So a little bit about my story. And again, like I said, it's in my book. Feel free to pick up a copy here. But I started out.
I just read a little bit of it today, actually. And I've read it before, but I'm rereading it now as a client.
Yeah. Well, I started out, I was a cyclist. I was racing bikes. I was in college. I started racing when I was 14 years old. And that was my first true passion. I always had like an entrepreneurial streak. I had a paper route. I sold wrapping paper door to door. I had a, not really a lawn care business, but I would take care of yards in the fall along the Chesapeake Bay. I'd make like $300 in a weekend. I thought my friends that worked an after school job for, you know, $5-$10 an hour were fools, because I'd make $300 in a weekend.
I made $2.85 an hour for my first job. So there I was go. Definitely a fool.
Well, it's, I started there too. And I was like, wait a minute, there's gotta be a better way. So I always had this kind of like small business mentality, but I was taught, like a lot of people, you know, go to school, get a good job, make money. And people said, oh, you're going to be an engineer like your grandfather. I did well in math and science. So I didn't really think any differently. We didn't have engineers in our family, but my father, who died at age 5, was an entrepreneur. I'm sorry, I said engineers, but I meant entrepreneur. So maybe I have it in my blood. But I found cycling. That was my passion. I was racing at age 14. I got to the point where I was a category one cyclist and I was racing with the pros. I was traveling all over the country. And all I wanted to do was be a professional cyclist. But I went to school. I went to Virginia Tech. I got a scholarship. I didn't have a lot of money, but I was racing my bike. And in between my freshman and sophomore years, my best friend, my training partner, my roommate died of a massive brain hemorrhage.
And wow. How old was he? 20?
He was 18 and I had just turned 19. Yeah. So it was one of those moments where it totally ripped my world apart. I mean, when you're that young, it was like everything I had was cycling. And Chris was like a brother to me. I mean, we spent every afternoon together riding on the bike. You know, we were going to be college roommates. He was moving in that summer and it was all ripped away. Went back to school. I was certainly depressed. I was, you know, didn't want to go to class. I'd skip class. I'd go ride my bike, but I got really good and I was winning a lot of races, but it was hollow. And I'll never forget, I was coming across the finish line a year after after Chris's first memorial race. And I won it 2 years in a row. So I win this race. I was in phenomenal shape. And I literally, and I can feel like my skin tingling now. I felt nothing. And the next weekend I was at the state championships and I pulled over on the side of the road. My mother was there. And she said, what are you doing? And I said, I'm done. She didn't know it, but what I was telling her was I was done racing for good. And she said to me, she goes, you never quit a race before. And she didn't know I was quitting the sport altogether. I went back to school and I thought, I got to live a life that earns the respect that I deserve, the life that I've been given, and also that honors the life of my friend that I lost. And with that came the freedom that I had learned to love, racing my bike, traveling all over the country. And I didn't really have any money. So I thought, okay, I'm going to be an investor. I started investing in the stock market and ultimately came to real estate, but I didn't have any money. So I went, found a job and ended up in the medical device industry, which, as you mentioned, I've been doing for 18 years. And that's how I generated the income to invest in properties and get to the point where we are today.
Well, that's amazing. And if it's okay with you, we go back a little bit more and you mentioned that your dad passed away when you were younger. What impact did that have on your money mindset and approach to life?
Yeah. I mean, I look back, Craig, and I'm thankful for all the experiences I have. And I grew up around my mother who was a saver and my stepfather who was a saver. And they did have some rental properties. They had 3 rental properties. And they taught me to save money. But my father, who was an entrepreneur, I didn't get to grow up around that. So we didn't have a lot. We ate vegetables out of cans. My grandmother made our food.
I thought that was normal when I was a kid too. That's
exactly. I mean, this is normal, right? So we didn't have a lot, but we had enough. And I didn't really think much of it. You know, I just thought, but that's how I was raised. You know, I was thought to be conservative with your money, save your money. And, you know, my mother was a teacher, so she taught me and helped me get good grades in school and go through that. So that is what I learned. I was fortunate. I had some mentors along the way, as we all do, in one way, shape, or form. And the same individual, Clint Provenza, who introduced me to cycling, a family friend at church, gave me a money magazine. And I'll never forget, the Roth IRA had just the law just passed. So I was about 18 years old, and he handed me the Money magazine. It showed kind of the miracle of compound interest. And I'll never forget staring at that page and thinking, this is awesome. And, you know, just thinking, okay, if I can invest, you know, $500 a month, I can be a millionaire. And that's where it all started.
Amazing. Amazing. So you went and you not only got the engineering degree, you actually got an MBA in portfolio management. Why are you not, you know, trading stocks and bonds today?
So two reasons. One, I wanted to be a professional cyclist. When I quit, I knew I didn't want to be an engineer. I always thought I would finish school, I'd have an engineering degree, I'd go race my bike for about 5 years, wouldn't make any money, and then I'd come back and figure out what I wanted to do. Well, after seeing my friends go to Europe and come back and tell me about all the stuff that was going on with drugs in the sport at that time, after training with Lance Armstrong, I got to train with Lance before he won the tour, after going to the Olympic Training Center, you know, again, that passion dried up when I realized that what I was doing wasn't really my ultimate goal in life. So I thought, well, what do I want to do? And as I mentioned, as I learned more about investing, I loved it. I loved reading the books. I loved learning about it. I got an MBA. I almost got a PhD in finance. And I thought, hey, I'm going to go work on Wall Street. But I also really enjoy being outside, having the ability to, you know, be in nature, ride my bike, and being on Wall Street isn't real conducive to that. So I started looking at other opportunities as well. What I found was the financial industry is largely driven by sales. And I got a little bit disillusioned at the time and thought, well, I don't want to, if I'm investing in index funds and I'm investing in real estate, how am I going to sell these products to clients when I don't do it myself? So I started expanding my horizons into different areas of sales, which I always kind of did in some way, shape, or form. I mean, even having a paper route, if you convince somebody to buy a paper, that's sales, right? And I came upon medical sales. And my biomechanical engineering degree, like I said, I didn't want to be an engineer, but I love the body. I love learning how to make things work in conjunction. I love designing the implants when we had classes on that. And I thought, how cool would it be to get to work in an OR alongside brain surgeons and orthopedic surgeons and communicate this information? And I fell in love with the industry, became a sales rep in my mid-20s. And that's why I took that path. And I thought, hey, I can still be an investor and do this at the same time.
How did you get so good at being a sales rep? Like, just, this is a great question for everybody, because who wants to be better at sales? What are your sales tips?
That's a great question. And I think I don't even consider myself a great salesperson. I think that, you know, I'm always evolving. And if you're listening and you have that idea in your head of a salesperson is like the sleazy car salesman, and my kids love Cobra Kai right now. So we were just watching an episode last night, you know, in the car, and they were talking about sleazy car salesmen. So it kind of made me chuckle. But at the core of it, sales is communication. And sales is being able to communicate and understand an individual's needs, whether it's personally or in their business, and see if it's a good fit for your product. And if you can provide value to somebody and communicate that value, you can be a really good salesperson. If you're a teacher, you're a salesperson. If you go to a job interview, you're a salesperson. You're communicating your value to that person. So if you want to be good, better at your business, if you want to be better at your relationship, go take a sales course, read a sales book, learn to communicate, learn to listen. That is the most important thing to being a better salesperson.
Got it. Very helpful. Very helpful. So tell us about, you know, you mentioned that you love the outdoors and stuff like that. You got your family now. Just give us a brief background on your wife and kids and what you do for fun right now. And then we'll get into how you got into real estate investing at age 21.
So yeah, I still love the outdoors, Craig. We live in beautiful Asheville, North Carolina. We're fortunate to have a property now where I get to look out over the mountains and downtown. And as I talk about in my book, I'm analytical, and I analyze where we buy properties across the United States based on a lot of criteria. And 15 years ago, I actually put together a spreadsheet, which some people don't believe, but if you know me a little bit, you know what a nerd I am. I was in the math team when I was a kid. I was in the marching band. I went to orchestra and band camp. So all those jokes are true. But I had this spreadsheet, and it stack ranked places across the country. But one of the most important things to me was, does it have the ability to, you know, fulfill the outdoor activities that we have. So I love to mountain bike. I still love to ride my road bike. I love to take my boys skiing. My wife's from Montreal, Canada. So another fellow Canadian. We love Canadians. Love to get up there. And I'm fortunate that she has a similar passion for the outdoors. She went to school in Boulder, Colorado, and she's a wonderful skier. So yeah, we love to, you know, whether it's this time of year skiing and kind of the small ski hills here in North Carolina or traveling out west in the summers, we do a lot of hiking, mountain biking with the boys. And, you know, even if it's just taking a walk at lunchtime with my dog, for whatever reason, being in the woods, it really mellows me out. I have a pretty intense personality, but if I can get in the woods for half an hour a day, it keeps me on the right track.
Well, I mean, there's something called forest therapy, I think, and it is super valuable. I tell my clients as much as possible to go for walks in woods because it gives them that time to think in that space. So we'll get to that in a moment and talk about how that you're able to balance all of this and be, you know, a parent and a husband. But right now we need to know, you know, tell us about how you got your first investment property and why should every investor own real estate as part of their portfolio?
Yeah. So we can make this real simple or we can make it really complex when it comes to why you should own real estate. But my story, I started with single family. So I bought a single family house. It was actually a townhouse. It was an attached townhouse. It was three bedrooms and now they call it house hacking. So I was in college, I was 21 and I looked down the road and I saw, hey, there's this townhouse for sale. And I thought, man, if I can buy this and I can rent the rooms out for $300 a month and my mortgage is $700 a month, I can basically live there for free because there's tax benefits with real estate as well. As I talk about in my book, they're called phantom losses or paper losses. And what happens is those losses can go against other income that you have, depending on, you know, your specific tax situation. But after taxes, I was living there for free, Craig. So that's what I would call a house hack today. If you're listening and you're thinking, wow, like I don't have a lot of money to get into real estate. You know, what should I look into? What we do on our podcast, The Next Level Income Show, is give you different options. You don't have to start and buy a 300 unit apartment building like we focus on today. You can buy a single house. You can rent out the rooms. You could even Airbnb a house. Or if you're handy, you could buy a house and fix it up. So that's how I got my start with a house hack. If you look at why you should own real estate, I think, again, look at the ultra rich. If you look at what they do, even families that didn't make their money in real estate, they're still putting 20, 25, 30% into real estate. And Richard Wilson, who was on our show, it was in one of the top like first five episodes that we did. He talks about how these $100 million centimillionaire families invest, and it all involves real estate. And the reason is real estate is a liquid, so it's very stable. If you're buying real estate that produces income, that's going to add income to your portfolio and it's going to reduce the volatility that your portfolio has if it's in the stock market, even in REITs, which are real estate stocks essentially. And it also increases the return. So from a numbers basis, everybody should own real estate because it increases your returns and decreases your risk. But more importantly, you can't eat stocks. You have to sell stocks or you have to take the dividends to actually live off that and buy food. Real estate, if you buy the right kind of real estate, it kicks off income. And if you read my book and you listen to, you know, any of my coaching that I do with my clients, the ultimate goal is getting to the point where your passive income exceeds your active income. And that's what I call true financial freedom. So that's one of the things that real estate can provide.
That's absolutely amazing. And then so if we do go to like, how the heck do you get this all done? You know, how are you able to do all this investing and how are you able to have the full-time sales job? And then how are you able to, now you do a little bit of coaching on this. And then obviously being the husband and father, what are some of the secrets that you've used there to actually pull this off?
Well, I'm going to shameless plug for you, Craig. I would say that a lot of the lessons that you teach have helped me. And something that really resonated for me, if you're an athlete, you will understand this. So athletes schedule their rest time. They schedule their races, they schedule their rest time. So people that train hard or compete, you might go out and you might do three really intense days a week with one or two off days. Maybe you get a massage and then maybe you do some moderate days in there as well. And you focus around that. And if you look at it, you know, or even if you strength train, if you look at it, there's only a few reps in there that really matter per workout. And it's the same thing in your life. So what I did, I took the lessons you provided, Craig. I said, okay, what can I do to make the maximum impact? And I found the times in my day that I could do that. And that's what I scheduled first. When I was in college, I was scheduling my workouts first around my classes. So this was very natural to me. When I quit racing in 2015, I used to train at 5 o'clock in the morning on my trainer in the dark, in the basement before I'd go into the hospital. And I was on call. I'd work 6:30, 7 in the morning till sometimes I'd be there all night. Frankly, I'd spent 3 nights in a row in the hospital one time on call. And I worked 7 months straight without a day off. I had 10 days I didn't go in, but 7 months straight was my longest streak where I didn't have a day off. But I started my business sitting at my desk at 5:30 in the morning, uninterrupted before my boys got up. And in 90 minutes a day, 5 days, sometimes 6 days, sometimes 7 days a week, but in 90 minutes a day, I was able to grow the Next Level Income business into what it is today. And that started 5 years ago. And again, I will thank you for those techniques. So today, things are more complicated. We have two young boys. We have my wife's off at a soccer practice with one of them now, but we schedule family time. So Friday is family pizza movie night. And our friends know, don't ask the Larsons to hang out on Friday because they're hanging out together. And we know that one day the boys are going to be teenagers and they're probably not going to want to do that. But we're always going to find time to do that. My wife and I have a weekly date. We love to do lunches together because it's easier with the kids in school and do that. And we share our goals. So I think the most important thing is being aligned. So if you're listening and you want to start a side business or you have something you're working on, make sure your partner is aligned with you first and foremost, and then schedule those things that are most important to you and the rest will fill in itself.
Awesome. So we jump back to real estate now. What do you feel are like the best real estate opportunities for the next decade after this turbulent year?
Yeah, it's been an interesting year. And what I will tell you is I believe in real estate cycles. And this goes back into the 1850s in the United States. You can trace this. Real estate goes on about an 18 to 19 year cycle. So it goes up for that long, it goes down. There's typically a mid-cycle slowdown. So if you listened to me a year ago, or actually a little bit more than a year ago, I was telling people that you have to be careful of 2020 because we're entering this midpoint of the cycle. I couldn't tell you that it was going to be coronavirus, and I couldn't tell you, I can't tell you that I shorted a bunch of stocks, but I actually liquidated my portfolio going into the end of the year because I was concerned about what was happening. So first off, we are going into the second phase of the cycle. This is the point where typically you see some really strong appreciation and really cool opportunities in real estate as we come out of this slowdown. So you're going to see the ability to pick up properties at a discount because you have restaurants that have defaulted, you have people that are defaulting on their mortgages, and some of these properties are going to come back into the market. Obviously, there's some changes, you know, with the administration, and depending on how the laws are passed, you know, that may change these things. Nonetheless, there are going to be opportunities for the future. If you want to know what sectors that I think are going to be strong, you can listen to my recent interview with Glenn Miller. He's at the University of Denver. He talks about kind of what markets are good, but I think the opportunities are going to be in short-term rentals. So you see a lot of people that don't want to stay in a hotel. They want to stay in a property where they're by themselves. My wife and I actually started our first Airbnb at the end of last year for this reason. And you'll hear that I always put my money where my mouth is. I'm never going to tell you to do something that I don't believe in. I think multifamily apartments are going to continue to be stable. The reason for that is you have baby boomers that are selling their homes and they want to rent. They need to unlock the equity in their home, in their homes. And a lot of them, they don't have enough saved up for retirement. Millennials are still renting. Do you know why they're still renting? A lot of them still have student debt. So they can't buy a house. They're having to wait to form households later. And last year pushed a lot of those younger individuals that had, you know, kind of part of the gig economy even further down at eroded savings, which means they might not be able to buy a house for another few years. So that's going to be good for apartments and for the stability of apartments. I also think we need to start looking at senior housing. So as the baby boomers age and as their parents age, there's going to be a real need for senior housing in this next decade and the decade following that. So I think, you know, in addition to, you know, multifamily, short-term rentals, and senior housing, you can also look into like industrial as more and more people are getting things delivered and doing that. So that's kind of like a high-level overview of some of the areas that I think are going to be really popular here in the future.
Is there anything that you're not touching with the 10-foot pole?
They're retail. So, you know, if you look at like strip malls and stuff like that, there's tremendous disruption in that space right now. Does that mean there's not opportunity? No, but I would say, you know, the opportunities like for a mall, for instance, I think there's opportunities to take a mall and take it from retail into, say, senior housing. So, I mean, think about it. You see all these old people walking around in the mall. Why not just, you know, put their apartment right there where they're walking already and you got it ready made.
Yeah. Or some of those delivery centers that you mentioned before and distribution centers.
Yeah, exactly. So I think we're going to see some adaptive reuse occurring and some, you know, really creative ways that people take advantage of that. And I think it's going to be a really interesting 5 years.
Got it. So if you were a 21-year-old Chris Larson today, knowing what you know now, and you had, you know, $3,000 or $5,000, how would you start? Would you do the same thing? Would you start with a single house?
So I probably would have to. I would start with something like that. I would either do an Airbnb or I would do a house hack again. I think that's a terrific way to get started. It's low risk. What I tell a lot of people, so if you're listening and you're young, maybe you're newly married or thinking about starting a family and you're okay with swinging a hammer or maybe being in an environment, I think a really great way in the United States, if you do a fixer up or you move in, you take a house that's $200,000, you invest $50,000, now say it's worth $300,000, you've doubled your money, right? Taking a $200,000 house, put 50 in, now it's worth 300. You sell that house within 5 years of living in it, and you lived in it two of those years, you get the profit tax-free. So tell me anything else where you can double your money in 2 years with pretty low risk in it, in something where you're going to have to live. So I would also look into that strategy as well. But the other thing I would do, Craig, is I would jump into the commercial space faster. I'd learn more about multifamily and I would find a mentor who could help me in that space. And I would think bigger. I had this linear way of thinking where I thought, hey, if I can get to 10 rentals as quickly as possible and have $10,000 of income coming in after expenses, not debt service, and then I can pay those off, then hey, 10,000 bucks a month in passive income, I'm good to go. That's how I thought initially. And I thought that way for about 10 years. And that was probably 9.5 years too long.
Got it. What's your experience with Airbnb so far? What do you like about it and what don't you like about it?
So I will tell you, I've been so pleasantly surprised with Airbnb that earlier today I actually recorded an episode with an Airbnb expert to share with our audience. So we love it. My wife loves getting the little requests as far as people coming in. So I think you have to look at it like anything. So I'm all about scalability. So when I was training medical device reps, I'd say, hey, how do you scale your business? How do you systematize things? I love the Eisenhower matrix that you talk about. So, you know, if you have something that's urgent, important, how can you get somebody, you know, that can be in place to deal with that? How can you systematize the things that don't work? So what excites me about Airbnb is you can arbitrage the difference between the long-term rental market. So basically, you know, a standard single family house that you rent out maybe for $1,500 a month, you can probably get $2,000 or $3,000 for Airbnb. So that's exciting. I mean, if that doesn't excite you to say, hey, I can get twice the revenue that I would in a different situation, then tell me what does, because I would love to hear about it. So what you need to focus on if you're looking at Airbnb is how do you address the areas that are kind of tedious? Cleaning. So you need to find somebody that you can trust to get in there and clean it, to turn it, that does a good job with COVID to make sure it's clean. How do you make sure you have good service, you get good ratings? And again, the best thing to do is find somebody that's done it, that's an expert in the area, because why waste your time figuring it all out yourself when you can lean on somebody that can teach you those lessons, get up to speed, and then maybe instead of doing one Airbnb, okay, you can do two or three really well.
Got it. Okay. Very, very good. Now, another thing that you cover in your coaching program is the make, keep, grow strategy. So walk us through, like, you know, where most people probably fall in that. And then what are one or two things that they should really be thinking about that will really move the needle in each one of those categories?
Absolutely. So the make, keep, grow strategy is what I talk about in our book. It's also how we structure the business. So if you want to make more money, keep more money, or grow your money, you're going to have all the resources right at our website, nextlevelincome.com. So I think, Craig, you do a tremendous job of helping your clients make more money. And what I say in my book is our family rule is to save 50%. And if you're listening and thinking like, I can't save 50% of what I make, that's why we start with make more money. So if you're spending, say, $60,000 a year for your lifestyle, and you want to save $60,000 a year, but you're only making, say, 80 or 90 before tax, let's figure out a way to help you make another $50,000 or $60,000, number one. So Craig, you have a ton of great resources. There's a lot of stuff out there, but that's the first thing I focus on with my clients. Number two is keep. A lot of people don't think about this. Taxes are probably your number one expense. So if you go from making $60,000 a year to 120, or you know, triple or quadruple that amount, your tax rate might maybe 15 or 20%. When it goes to 30 or 40%, you're giving a lot back to the government. So what you need to focus on is your business, and are your investments structured properly for tax efficiency? Because if you can keep more of that money working for you, then that's going to be that much money that's compounding into the future. So that's something that people overlook. If you're doing taxes yourself and you have a business, I strongly encourage you to find an accountant that can give you tax strategy. And Craig, you and I have talked about this. A lot of CPAs, there's a lot of good CPAs out there, but they don't start with a tax strategy in mind. They take your receipts and they just file them for you, and they say, we're following the right laws. Well, when I was in college, I went and I heard a former IRS agent speak so I could learn the rules of the IRS and set my life and my business up for those. You need to do the same thing. Find a great tax strategist. We have several on the podcast that you can listen to. So just scroll through those episodes. The other thing is, I talk about the protect bucket in my book. What about insurance? Insurance is another way, as you make more money, that you can keep more of your money. There's insurance products out there that act like Roth IRAs that allow you to keep more of that money. And there's also similar products in Canada if you're listening and you say, well, we don't have Roth IRAs up here. So I would say a lot of people need to think about that keep strategy as you're making more money. And then the final piece, as I mentioned earlier, our ultimate goal is to help people get more passive income than their active income. That's the grow strategy. And everybody's investment strategy is a little bit different. So if you're listening and saying, real estate's not for me, that's okay. Maybe you're a business owner, or maybe you like to buy businesses. You can create a strategy around that to create passive income for yourself. Or you could even automate your business if you have a small business, or bring in areas of your business with partners to bring in passive income through that means. But the point is, once you're making more money and you have the proper strategy set up to keep as much money as possible, that money needs to flow into what I call an opportunity fund to ultimately grow for you. And if you set it up properly, you can execute on that strategy as long as you want to, and that will give you true freedom.
Love it. I love it. So if you were to say to everybody who's a parent, you know, how can they start teaching their kids the right rules and lessons about money? Like, and what lessons do you want your kids to understand about money?
I love that question. And it's a real passion of mine, Craig. We work with a local organization here in Asheville called Open Doors. And their mission is to take kids that are in poverty and allow them to go to college. And we're instituting a financial literacy program for them. And it really starts in the house. So I think like, okay, what would I teach my children, and how can I translate this and teach this to a greater group of people? So, you know, my boys, first off, be comfortable talking to your kids about money. Be comfortable. Now, this doesn't mean you have to say, hey, you know, hey kids, this is how much your parents make, and tell other people how much you make. That's not what I mean about that. But be comfortable talking about money, talking about what things cost, you know, the energy bill, for instance, like, you know, show it to them. So what we do is we teach our children, our two boys, Miles and Ethan, they're 9 and soon to be 11, to save 50%. So we give them $1 a day. That's their salary or their allowance. And they have to work around the house for it. They have to take out the trash. They have to vacuum and do those things. When we pay them at the end of every month, I say, hey, we're going to go to the bank, and every dollar you put in the bank, I'll match it. So if they put $15 in, I'll give them another 15 bucks. So it costs me about 45 bucks a month out of my pocket, but this is money that, you know, I'm probably going to give them to spend in other ways anyway. If they put 20 bucks in, I'll give them $20. So that's our way of teaching them how to invest, because it's a little abstract at this point. The other thing I would look into is some of the resources that are out there. One of my business partners, Danny Rendazzo, you can check out his interview on our podcast. He has a series of children's books. He's two into a series of five books. It's wow. DannyRendazzo.com, and I can send you that link if anybody wants to check it out. And they're great. You can read them to kids as young as five. I have them sitting right back here for my children. And just talking about things like counting your money and the importance of understanding, you know, the value of a dollar and those small things that you can do. The other resource that I've used personally for our kids is, if anybody's heard of Robert Kiyosaki and Cashflow, there's a board game called Cashflow. There's one called Cashflow for Kids. And if you're intimidated, if you're a parent, you're like, I don't even know these things myself. It's okay. You can play the board game first with your partner, your spouse. Then you can play it with your kids, even the kids version. Then you can upgrade them to the adult version. I think those are some really terrific resources. And then if you advance kind of to the next level, I would say start paying your children if you have a business. Talk to your accountant. Make sure you're paying them for viable business necessities that they're doing. Maybe they're cleaning your office. You know, maybe they're cleaning your Airbnbs if you have an Airbnb business like we were talking about. And then start an investment account for them. And what we do for our children at the end of every month, we show them how much they made in their investment account and then they know how much they made getting paid their $30 allowance. And I can tell you, it doesn't take very long to teach a child that investing is pretty cool when they see that they made two or three times in their investment account than they did actually working. Mm.
Fantastic, man. Absolutely amazing. Now you have the Next Level Income book, which I'm reading right now. Again, you have the nextlevelincome.com podcast. What else is next for you? What's next level for Chris?
Yeah. So Craig, we've talked about coaching. I've had people reach out here over the last couple of years and ask if I can do this. And I've had to turn them down because, you know, it's not been something that I've had the capacity to do, but I'm fortunate we've gotten to a point where I'm able to walk away from my W-2 job. And that's going to allow me the ability to scale the education portion of our business. So I'm going to be providing more resources to people that are out there. Also providing coaching. If you're interested in coaching, you can simply send me an email, coach@nextlevelincome.com, coach@nextlevelincome.com, and I can give you some more information on there. But first, get a free copy of our book, nextlevelincome.com. Click on the book link, and I'll send you a free copy in the mail, whether you're in the United States or even in Canada. We'll send it up there for you. And then, you know, we're going to continue to expand our real estate business. So what we focus on for investors, and if you're interested in learning more, again, you can check out our website and you can click on the invest link. But we are up to over 300 million in acquisitions now, about a little over 1500 doors. And our main focus for investors, Craig, is helping provide, especially busy professionals, busy entrepreneurs and business people, the ability to directly invest in real estate alongside of us and get the benefits that we talked about before. That stability for your portfolio, that passive income that comes in, and allow them access to investments that really only the ultra rich had. And these are the types of investments that I wish I knew about, you know, 15 years ago, instead of just focusing and grinding away at those little single family rentals.
Absolutely amazing. Thank you so much, sir. So again, just remind everybody of where they can listen to your podcast.
Yeah. So again, the easiest thing to do is go to nextlevelincome.com. We have the book, we have the podcast, we have several other resources there that you can check out.
Absolutely amazing. Thank you so much, Chris. Really excited to work with you. Really excited to have you as a coach and client and grow your business. And really grateful for you to be on the show. And everyone's going to get so much value out of this and even more when they check you out. So thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you, Craig. It's been wonderful. And I'm really grateful to have you along on life's journey here.
Hope you enjoyed that show, everyone. Chris is awesome. And you'll probably hear from him again because, again, he's coaching me and he's helping me become a better steward of my money so that I can build the family wealth that I want from all the hard work that I've done here for all of my Early to Rise listeners. So if you like the show, let me know on Instagram @RealCraigValentine or send us an email at support@earlytorise.com. Make sure to get Chris's book at nextlevelincome.com. And if you want to be like Chris and grow a business, remember he's getting my help on the grow side of his financial plan, then you can go to craigvalentine.com/apply to work with me and get the money that you need to invest in your family's future. Looking forward to working with you soon. Bye-bye.